Tango Tango Papa 1911, May 27, 2015.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Beaver Dam, Ohio. So it's been a number of days since the last podcast, and as usual, company has been keeping me pretty busy, and so that's part of the reason for lack of podcasts. And the other thing is that for a long time, I was the podcasting was kind of cutting into my sleep, and at this point, I don't know, my motivation has changed, and so I'm. For whatever reason, I'm not as willing to do that. So I'm much more likely to, when it's time to go to bed, and I go to bed. And if that means that I'm not going to podcast nearly as much, then that's what it means. So, and I think it really comes down to a matter of motivation overall. And so my motivation over time has changed. Now, as I've said before, if I decide to end the podcast, I will let you know. I'm not going to simply let it fade off into nothingness. And as most, there's a lot of podcasts that that happens to. They never end it. They never tell anybody that they're ending it, whether it's more than one person doing it or an individual. It simply fades off, and there are no more episodes. But if you listen to it, it's kind of like a TV show that doesn't have a real ending. So, if I ever decide to cut this off, I will. But I'll let you know. So. But in the meantime, there's going to be some lulls. I try to do this once a week, but it may slip. Right now, I think I looked, and the last podcast was at least probably 9-10 days ago. So it really depends on how busy I am, and they are keeping me busier than they ever have in the past, really, and. So I'm either driving or I'm taking a break, and most of the time, if the breaks are shorter, then I'm going to be spending most of the break sleeping. So, anyway, I have a couple of audio files that I want to play, and then some other stuff. So first of all, I've talked quite a bit about idolatry, and there are some people that I don't know if they really know what that means, because if you read the Bible and you and read the stories about the ancient Israelites, and they had their idols, and the Bible stories kind of give the impression that they're building these some sort of a totem or an idol, maybe in the corner of their rooms, in their houses or wherever, or maybe it could be out in their yard, I suppose. But they're building these idols and false gods, and gives the idea that they're figurines. of various sorts. So, but the real the idea of what an idol is, it can be that, certainly. It can be a thing. But where the problem occurs, where this sin, dust that word off and put it back in the vocabulary, occurs, where the danger occurs, where the damage to the idolizer occurs, because it really, it's not hurting God. If you idolize a statue, let's say, it's not hurting God at all. It's hurting you, because you're using that statue, in this case, you're using whatever it is you're idolizing, you're using that as a way of, in a sense, making yourself feel better. You're creating a false god, as if you were God making another god, creating another god. And so but it could be that, but it happens. Idolization, as everything else does, it happens in your mind. That's where the real problem happens. It's like drama. Drama doesn't really happen outside. People think that it's their dramatic situations, and they think that somehow it's the other people that are being dramatic. No, when it comes right down to it, the drama, if there's drama, the drama is happening in your own mind. It's not happening on the outside. Maybe other people, it's happening in their minds, but who cares what's going on in their minds? It's what goes on in my mind. It's what goes on in your mind that matters. You can't get inside someone else's mind. Or you shouldn't be able to, and they should, therefore they should not be able to get into your mind. Now they can, unfortunately, if you resent, if you put people up on a pedestal, false god, creating a false god out of someone, then somehow they've managed to get into your mind. But when you resent, you're actually idolizing. That's a form of idolization. So I watched this YouTube video the other day, and someone sent me a link to it. And I'm not going to say who the video was, and it's going to be pretty much anonymous. It was this gal on YouTube. And she was talking about, she was comparing this new Apple Watch to the original iPhone. And she had her original iPhone, and she was comparing the two. She had the little Apple Watch kind of up on top of her original iPhone, and she was remarking about how similar they kind of looked, and and at least once or twice she was kissing the devices and talking to the devices as if they were little teddy bears. And that, even though she was probably trying to be funny and make a video that would go viral, as viral as possible, there's an element of truth there. And she was idolized, and that's idolization. Right there's your idolization. Now, how many of us are doing that in our minds with our cars? How many of us are doing that in our minds with our family members? How many of us in our minds are doing that with money? So, in any case, I'll go ahead and play this. And again, I don't even, at this point, I don't even remember what her name was. And if there's anything that it would be that's going to be identifying in the video, then that part's going to be left out. This is not meant to ridicule her, but what it is meant to do is illustrate what idolization really is, because a lot of people think, oh, I don't have a statue in the corner. I'm not idolizing. I'm not creating a false god. Oh, yes, you are. We all do, to varying extents. We all do that. We've all done it. So, anyway, let me go ahead and play that, and I'll be right back afterwards.
Look at you. You are like a mini original iPhone. This is just crazy. So now this is the aluminum Apple Watch, so I'm sure the steel will look even more similar to this one. Look at you, you little nugget of love. Look at this. It's almost the same thickness, which is kind of crazy because this aluminum one is super light. This is the 38 millimeter, and the 42 will probably, not probably, definitely, is slightly bigger. Look at you. Look at you. Whoa, homie, put yourself back down. So that's, it's kind of crazy. Let me know what you guys think about these similarities. I loved you. I still love you. It's not like I don't love you any longer. It's just I've moved on to smaller.
So there was an example, a very concrete example of idolatry. And again, how many of us do that? Even if we're not overt about it and we're not making videos about it on and putting them up on YouTube or whatever, how many of us do that? There was a friend on Facebook, and when was it? I think it was yesterday or the day before. And he said, and he's standing there, and I guess his wife or something took a picture of him next to his new pickup truck. And he posted two pictures of him standing beside his new pickup truck, and me and my new truck. Well, you know, and of course, guarantee you, because I've bought new vehicles in the past, and I know what went on in my own mind as far as if I were God, beaming my love to the new vehicle. It's as simple as that. That's idolization. It's creating a false idol. And so that's what it is. It's not, you know, because people will argue and they'll say, no, idolization is just groups do it. Well, it can turn into a group activity, certainly. It's easy if it once it turns into a group activity, then it, let's say you're standing in line at an iPhone launch event, that's idolization and it's a group activity. Or you go to an Apple keynote or you're just watching it and you're getting all excited about it, that's a sort of a group activity, a group idolization. But it doesn't have to be the group. It can happen and it does happen individually in your own mind. As a group, it facilitates it easier, because then there you see these other people that are doing it, and it helps you to feel more justified in doing it. But idolization is idolization, whether someone can see you do it or not. And typically people will do it so that other people can see them if they want the group support. But it can be perfectly private. It can happen in your own mind and no one ever know it except you. But you need to be aware of what this is, because it's dangerous. And you think, oh, it's cute, love the little teddy bear type of thing. And you know, and you pet the little teddy bear or whatever, as if you're a little kid, except you're an adult, or you're doing it virtually in your mind with your new car, or whatever. Again, it's the danger of it is that it the reason that people idolize things is to, it's a way of playing God in your own mind. It's a way of helping to, it's a way of distraction, and it's a way of helping drive a wedge between yourself and your conscience. It's a way of helping to maintain that wedge between yourself and your conscience. So I've told you what idolization is, and you should be able to recognize it. And if you want to continue to do it, you do it at your own peril. It's a bad thing to do. And it's not bad because it's quote-unquote a sin. It's bad. Any kind of sin is bad because it directly has a negative impact on you, the sinner. That's why you don't want to sin, because it precludes any relationship that you, a genuine relationship you could have with your Creator. It moves you farther away from that. So, anyway, I've got another piece of audio. A few days ago, I came across these news stories. And apparently this has been going on for at least 10 years. There's a bunch of YouTube videos, and that's where the audio for this came from, was a YouTube video that I'm going to play. Actually, several YouTube videos kind of put together. But there are these, there's been multiple instances, really all over the world, in different places, of these loud, oftentimes trumpet-like sounds. And it's very interesting because in some cases these things are incredibly loud. And all, you know, the people, they turn on their phones now because the phones are everywhere. And so everybody now has the ability to record right in their pocket already. And so people are beginning to record these things. And as they're recording everything, people are recording accidents and as they happen, and all kinds of different things are being recorded nowadays because everyone's carrying around a video recorder in their pocket in the form of a smartphone. So, but these people, they'll turn on their phones and really sort of, all they can really do is aim the camera up at the sky, and there's these incredibly loud trumpet-like noises. And there's no explanation of, no one has been able to come up with an explanation of what it is. Other than, well, some people say, well, maybe it's tectonic plates shifting. Whatever. It's interesting, but there's really no explanation for it. I'll go ahead and play that. And these sounds are really interesting. They're extremely interesting. I'll play them, and then you can just make of them what you will.
Dude. Did you guys hear that? Heard anything like that before.
Отойди оттуда, выйди.
Okay, so there were the, that was actually kind of a compilation of these trumpet-like sounds that have happened really all over the world. They've happened in small rural places. I think one of them is either North or South Dakota. Up in Canada, as well as in China, Europe. They've really happened all over the place. And, of course, some of them have ended up on YouTube. And so what you know, just if you want to type in the appropriate search term, trumpet sounds, because that's really what they sound almost like horn-type sounds. But are they man-made? Don't know. This has been going on for a number of years. So I've never experienced anything like this. But these are very interesting because you can tell by in the videos where there are people visible that they're actually transfixed by it. These are very loud sounds. I don't know if you know anything about the nature of sound, but it sound tends to die off pretty quickly. Sound waves obviously can be carried by the wind. And I don't know if you've ever experienced that. Like if you're one time I was in Sacramento, I think I was in Modesto, California actually, at this place, and it was kind of windy, and there was this place I was at had a sort of, it wasn't, I don't know, was if was this a, it was maybe it was a it wasn't it was almost like a city that was in this tent in Modesto, and it was like a city siren of some sort. It might have been in like a noontime some places you'll have the, like a noontime siren. So it reminded me of that. I don't remember if I decided it was a noontime siren or it could have been a fire alarm siren. But anyway, I heard the siren and the wind was blowing, and I could hear the wind was kind of distorting it, and so that to a certain extent, so it would get the siren noise would get a bit louder depending on the wind gusts. So that can happen. That type of thing can happen. Or if the wind is blowing in the opposite direction, it can minimize even a loud sound. But in order for something to be that loud, there's a tremendous amount of energy that's being released in order to make a really super loud sound like that. It's very interesting. So make of it what you will. I find it a fascinating phenomena. So anyway, I've been writing down my thoughts here and there as usual, and so I'll just kind of go through these and comment on them as I go along. And kind of along the lines of idolatry, have you ever thought it? I don't know how many people have thought of this, but why is it that only human beings idolize? We're the only creature on this world, on this earth, that is capable of idolizing. So that's another thing that sets human beings apart. Name me an animal that idolizes, that does what this gal did with her little Apple Watch and her original iPhone. That we've all done probably as children with our little teddy bears and our other little toys, or as adults with our new cars or other possessions, or with people, places, and things. Animals don't do that. They're not capable of idolizing. So there's a significant difference between human beings and animals. Animals don't idolize. They do not have the capacity to make any kind of idol at all. So there's a significant difference between human beings and animals right there. And that is a very significant difference. You go in a restaurant and you see this term comfort food. I've seen the term comfort food for a while now. I guess that's been around for a few years. And you see them talk about it on television. And you go in a restaurant and it talks about comfort food, and they may even put that on the menu. If you go in, I think right now, if you go in a TA truck stop into their restaurants, and they give you a menu, it talks about comfort food. What does that mean? Comfort food. So you could change the word comfort to idolatry. Comfort food is idolatry food. Do you have an emotional relationship with your food? Do you love your food? Do you love your ice cream? Does your food make you feel better? You're all upset and somehow you think, well, I'm going to have this ice cream and it's going to make me feel better. Or I'm going to have whatever, this piece of cake, and somehow it's going to make me feel better. There's idolatry right there. So idolatry, comfort food, is idolatry food. Wrong. Now, we have to have food in order to eat. And I'm not saying that you have to eat dirt or you have to eat some kind of tofu or something that you can't enjoy your food. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, you know, when you're eating especially, because I believe we all have a food problem, when you're eating a food, when you're eating, be very aware of your relationship with the food and just be aware. Try to be objective to the food. Try to be objective with your relationship to the food. As you're eating the food, be aware of it. Kind of aware of the texture of it. And the tendency is to kind of get lost in the feeling that it gives you. Idolatry gives the temporary illusion of superiority to the idolater. So in other words, when you're engaging in idolatry, let's say you're eating your comfort food, you're eating your ice cream, and you've got this, and it ends up actually giving you a temporary illusion of superiority. When in fact, it's exactly the opposite of what you think it is. Because when you're feeling superior, let's say you've got your new Apple Watch, and you're feeling really superior to everybody else because you've got this wonderful watch and it's so sophisticated and it makes you feel so good and you just really feel superior. And what's actually happening, you're achieving a new level of inferiority. It's exactly the opposite of what you think it is. I don't pay very much attention to the news. And mostly I just kind of read through headlines, if I bother with it at all. And of course, I somehow still know what's going on. It's amazing. And so, recently there was this so-called Deflategate. And as I understand it, and I didn't really read any of the details, and I just kind of have because I'm not interested in it. Nonetheless, I know some of the details. Apparently, the ball players had something to do with Pittsburgh Steelers, at least that's the impression that I got. Has something to do with Tom Brady and the Pittsburgh Steelers, maybe, and they were letting a little air out of the football somehow so that it would make it easier to grab, and somehow it was going to give them an advantage, which I don't quite understand that, because if one person's going to get the advantage, then they all do. And, you know, you can make the argument, well, people have different sized hands. Well, then everybody's going to be at the same disadvantage, regardless of how much air is in the ball. Even if it's aired up as much as it's supposed to be. So, but the interesting thing is, it's really remarkable when you think about it. You remember I think it had something to do with Pittsburgh, actually. You remember the coach that was really, they decided that he had really been engaging in child molestation. And a lot of people knew about it for a long time. And yet somehow they excused it because, well, the coach, he was a winning coach. And so they excused it. You remember, I guess it's been a few years ago, that Michael Vick, the ball player that was found to be, and I think he was convicted, and he may have even served some jail time, possibly. Certainly, he was, I think, I don't remember the details too much because, again, I don't follow sports much, but I know people talk about it. He was engaged in illegal dogfighting. And that's there are laws against that. Because it is animal abuse. But somehow, he's out of jail now, I believe, and the, you know, the fans have kind of accepted him back, and he's apologized, but he's probably really only sorry that he got caught. It's one of those kind of things. He's just sorry that he got caught. But somehow the fans can accept him back, but why? Because he can play the ball. He can play the game. Now, why is it that people are getting so upset over this Deflategate thing? Of they're letting air out of the football somehow. They're getting so upset about that. But child molester, animal abuser, oh, it doesn't matter. We don't want to know about that. That's okay. We can forgive that. But by golly, if they let the air out of the ball, that's unforgivable. Now, why would that be? And the idea popped into my head. It's incredibly simple as to why that would be. Football is, in the minds of many fans, what do you think this popularity? It's idolatry. It's a false religion. Football, various kinds of sports, with most people, they turn it in to a false religion. And the evidence that it's a false religion, there's a lot of evidence that in the minds of many people that it's false religion, but the thing is, why would they get so upset about the football with the air being let out of it? It's the same reason that the followers of Islam get so upset when people draw the cartoons of Muhammad doing, you know, in kind of compromised positions. Same difference. Because they're messing with the religious icon. You do not draw the Prophet Muhammad under risk of death. You do not draw the Prophet Muhammad and put, you know, in a compromising position. And if you're in the football religion, you don't mess with the icon. And the icon, of course, the religious icon in the football religion is the football itself. It would be like, if in the Apple religion, it would be like desecrating the Apple logo. It's desecrating the religious icon. The false religious icon. So that explains why people got so upset over the Deflategate. And they're willing to excuse these other things. Oh, we'll excuse the child molester. He's a winning coach. We'll excuse the dog or the dog abuser, the animal abuser, because he's such a good ball player. We need to win. We want to win. We want to be number one. It's absurd. But it's just an indication of what is of the depravity that we have sunk to. Because sports is big business. Billions and billions of dollars, big business. Why is it big business? It's because we have all of these people that are needing a false religion. Why do you need a false religion? You need a false religion because you don't have a real one. You need a false religion to keep you need a phony religion, a fake religion, a false religion to keep the real one away. And so we idolize all kinds of different things. Some people idolize science, or that's what they claim, that they idolize science, or they idolize the scientific process. And the scientific process, or the scientific, the scientific process itself is, there's nothing wrong with it. It's great if you follow it. But the problem is we often have people that are really perverts that are doing science. And so therefore, if perverts are doing science, that equals perverted science. And so that's how you end up with people that have phony data. They phony up the data. In the case of the so-called global warming or climate change that they're calling it now, it's very clear that the data's been phonied up, and the people that have done it have an agenda, and it's perverted science, so therefore it's not real. And the danger is that there's so much of that now that it's phony, it's fake. We've been bombarded, most of us, I've been bombarded my entire life with all of these studies. This is good for you. No, it's bad for you. This is scientific. I posted on my Facebook starting back in the 1920s, up until really, I guess, sometime in the 60s, fancy shoe stores had these fluoroscopes, and they were with the intention, the idea was that you'd go in there as a customer, and you could put the shoes on that you were going to maybe buy, and or you were trying out, and then you'd put your feet in the fluoroscope, and you could see your bones, and because it was shining an X-ray through, it was onto the screen, and then there was a place where whoever's feet were in the fluoroscope, they could look, and then there were a couple of different viewers, and then maybe if it was a child, the child could look if his or her feet were in the fluoroscope, and then there was a place for the parent to look, and then there was a place for the shoe salesman to look. So there were typically three view places on, where they could look down and see the image, the projected image of the live projected image of the bones in their feet. And of course, in the 20s, this was sold as this new scientific method, revolutionary scientific method of shoe fitting. If you're a good parent, don't you want to do the best you can for your child's foot and get the shoes that are the longest lasting, so you don't have to keep replacing them all the time? And so your child's foot will be able to, it won't be messed with, messed up. Don't you want to do the right thing? And so it was presented in the advertisements, it was presented as the latest in science. Well, of course, the only problem was that it was radiation, and it was a lot of radiation. So finally, in the 60s, they finally decided that these things were really dangerous, and they started doing away with them, and so they persisted clear up until... most of them were gone by 1970. Most of these fluoroscopes were gone. But there was one that was found in this video that I watched. There was some shoe store somewhere that somehow had escaped and still had the thing as late as 1980. There was still one of these things possibly in use in a shoe store somewhere, irradiating people's feet with it. And these things flooded radiation. So the not only were you flooding the feet of whoever had their feet in the fluoroscope, looking to try to see their bones and their feet, but it was flooding the people around it. It was flooding the salesman with X-rays. It was horrific, and yet it was presented to science. It was scientific. It's the latest in science. Don't you want to be scientific? And of course, oh, it was wrong. Too bad, it was wrong. Not science's fault. So really, you know, and in the, I keep running across all of these people talk, you know, and I hear the discussions, people talking about how things are falling apart. And a lot of people realize something is really wrong. But the real problem is, it's really simple. We have raised, it's been going on for several generations, you raise children without ethics, and those children grow up, and then you end up with chaos. It takes about three or four generations, and you can, and a country's destroyed. You get rid of the ethics, then you've got chaos, and that's what we're experiencing. It's sort of like a moral China syndrome. If you're familiar with the China syndrome, if you have a nuclear plant, and the core starts to melt down. Then, you know, theoretically they say that it could melt, you get this runaway nuclear meltdown, and theoretically it could go all the way to China. Hence they call it the China syndrome. So the same thing applies morally. Once it gets beyond a certain point, once you've destroyed morality and then the reaction begins to spread exponentially, at some point it's a runaway, it's like a runaway freight train. So it's the equivalent of a moral China syndrome. It's a runaway meltdown of morality. So what is the answer to this? What is the answer to it? The answer has to happen individually. All of these things happen, they seem to be happening in a group. It seems that that things are happening kind of in a group, but it really, things are happening individually, and so therefore the cure has to happen individually as well. So I don't know about the group. I don't know that the group can be saved. But the question is, do you as an individual want to be caught up in this? Do you want to, are you happy with kind of living in the chaos of being buffeted around? Are you okay with the status quo? Are you okay kind of going along to get along, go along with the rest of the herd, fit in? Be part of the sea of all alike? Are you happy being programmed? which is another way of saying, are you happy being a slave? The cure is very simple. It's to come out of your thoughts. I've been listening to this book, and I've mentioned it several times. It's called Persuasion by Robert Cialdini. Excellent, excellent book. I highly recommend it. But so I got another one that I'm in the process of listening to that's about advertising. And it's not quite as good as the Robert Cialdini book, Persuasion. This book is pretty good, and I'm in the process of listening to it. I started listening to it today. This book makes it very clear about how human beings can be advertised to, and how advertisers are able to affect behavior change, get someone to buy products, get them to do various things, trick them into it, manipulate them. Do you like being manipulated? And of course, they always present, even the Robert Cialdini book, he just presents the studies as if every human being is the same, every human being has these problems of suggestibility, every human being, if you approach them this way, you approach them in certain ways, they're all going to be the same. And they all have the desire to fit in, they all have the same desires and wants and the same structures in their brain. And everything else is irrelevant. And you can just pick human beings in Borneo, or you pick them in the United States, or you pick them in Russia, and you do your experiments on them, and they're all going to be the same. I contend that that's probably true, except what can cure that? And it's learning to hold yourself apart from your thoughts. We as human beings are not our thoughts. We have an awareness that is separate from thought. Most people they think that they are their thoughts. They believe that they are their thoughts. And they're caught up in a squirrel cage that it just goes around and around and around and goes nowhere. Their awareness, with most human beings, awareness is caught in the brain's machinery. And so when they're testing the brain's machinery and they're trying to learn as much as they can about how the machinery works, and that's fine, that's the way it works. But they never address the moral side of it. That's the side they stay away from. I contend that if we're separated from our Creator, then we are subject to all of these brain mechanisms. We are subject to being manipulated. We are subject to being programmed. And, you know, whatever idea comes along, we can end up going along with it, and we'll swear up and down that it was our idea. You can be made to do almost anything. And you'll swear at your own idea that it was you acted out of your own will, when clearly you acted out of pressure. You acted out of someone else's will. someone else's agenda. And you will do things that are against your own interests. So if you go to my website, truckertompodcast.com, up at the top there's a link that says meditation. Click on that link. That link that will take you to a page where I have about four MP3 files hosted right there on my site. Those files will teach you a very simple meditation technique. Now recently there's been these... I've seen a few articles about, the dark side of meditation. And I could probably write one of those articles. The dark side of meditation. Well, what would the dark side of meditation be? There's different types of meditation, and quite frankly, I think the effectiveness of many of them is probably questionable. The one that I practice, that I've practiced for years, and the one that's on my website, is very, very simple. It's very simple. It doesn't require you to repeat words over and over. All it requires is that you be aware. Essentially, be aware of your hand. So there really is the only downside with that is now here is the downside. Here's the dark side of it. If you let's say that you end up you practice this and you decide that hey I feel better this really works. And let's say that you do that for a while and you start to gain benefit from it. But then something happens and you turn away from it. That can be a downside. Or let's say that you decide that you're gonna backslide and you go back into whatever whatever you've done in the past. Whatever behavior you've engaged in the past, and even though you know it's wrong, you do it anyway. That conscience that you used to run away from is going to be like a laser beam at that point. And the biggest mistake of all that you can make is resenting your conscience, because that is tantamount to resenting God. Same thing. If you resent your parents, specifically if you resent your father, that is tantamount to resenting God. And that is painful. Especially if you've had a relationship with your Creator, or you started a genuine relationship, and then you do something to start to break that, it's like a laser beam. And then if you resent that, you're in big trouble. So these articles that are saying, meditation can trigger. And trigger depression. Well, how would that work? You resent your conscience because that's, you came closer to it, you started to make friends with it, and then you made a greater enemy of it, you tried to run away, you resent it, resentment doesn't have anywhere to go, comes back on you, and that's depression. Resentment is simply, depression is simply resentment, judgment, is another word for resentment that doesn't have anywhere to go, and it comes back on the person that's judging. And judgment, people think they know what judgment is. Judgment is simply kind of playing God in your own mind, as if you were God and your thoughts could strike someone dead. Person, place, or thing, you could just strike someone dead with your thoughts. hurl the mental thunderbolts and strike them dead. That's the best, description that I can come up with for judgment. And if the judgment doesn't have anywhere to go, it comes back on you and you're depressed. So, a real relationship with your Creator is nothing to toy around with. But this is on my website. It's a very simple technique. All you really have to do, it's just a way of being still. There's a line in the Bible, "Be still and know that I'm God." And so, while I'm doing the podcast, I'm going to just go through just a few minutes, and we'll go through the meditation. Done this a number of times before. It's good to do it once in a while. So right now, I am sitting on the edge of my bunk. And so just find a straight back chair. Or in this case, I'm just sitting on the edge. I don't really have a seat back. And so I'm sitting here on the edge. Close my eyes. Got my right arm down by my side. Just kind of dangling there. And so sit in your straight back chair, close your eyes, right arm down by your side. Then simply become aware of the index finger on your right hand hanging by your side with your eyes closed. Become aware of your right index finger. Gently be aware of it. And as you become aware of it, you'll notice that it begins to tingle. Now, while you're doing this, got your eyes closed, I want you to look at the inside of your eyelids. What do you see when you look at the inside of your eyelids? Now, what I see, I'll try to describe it. It's sort of like the visual version of the tingling that I feel in my right index finger when I become aware of it. It's like it's just a little bit energized. And so when I look at the inside of my eyelids, I see, for lack of a better way of describing it, kind of a visual tingling, or you could almost say, it could almost be described as kind of like little dancing pixels in a sense. Not unlike the snow that you would see when an analog television was tuned to an empty channel. And you'd see the snow on the screen. So now shift your attention to your middle finger. As you continue to look at the inside of your eyelids. Gently be aware of the middle finger on your right hand. And as you do so, you'll notice that it starts to tingle. It starts to gently tingle. Next, shift your attention to the next finger. Make it tingle. And finally to the little finger until it begins to tingle, and then back to your thumb, and then to your thumb, make on your right hand, and it'll begin to tingle. Now if you find, and as you do this, you continue to look inside your eyelids, if you find that you suddenly get pulled back into thought, and if she says this and I'll say that, and if he does this and I'm going to do that, and this was unfair and that was unfair. If you get pulled back into that, just note that don't get frustrated, but just note that, I got pulled back into the dream. Let's go bring my awareness back to looking at the inside of my eyelids and to being aware of my fingers on my right hand. So that's a shortened version. So now what I want you to do is open your eyes and give yourself a little stretch. And it's always remarkable to me that when I just open my eyes and just doing that for a few minutes, the world, it's amazing. The world seems cleaner. I find it quite remarkable how it ends up making everything look clean, just slightly cleaner. And it's the same world. But on the other hand, it does, because of the way the brain works, the brain is creates a model of the world, and so therefore I believe bringing my attention out of the machinery of my brain helps to clean that model up. But it is remarkable that it does seem, everything does seem to look crisper and cleaner. So that was a shortened version of the meditation. It's well worth it. I've been practicing this meditation for years. The meditation itself is not going to save you. But what it can do, what it's designed to do, is bring you to help you find a state of objectivity, where you can become objective to your problems. Bring you into the moment. Because, quite frankly, that the moment is the only place, that's where your creator is. Creator's not in your thoughts, not in the thoughts of the past or thoughts of the future. Your creator is in the present moment. So that's on my website. Give it a try. It's up to you to continue it. That is really the only thing that we really have control over is what we give thought to, what we give our awareness to, more accurately, what we give our awareness to and our reactions to the world around us. Now, your reactions could end up being on autopilot, which that's not good. You don't want to just kind of mechanically go through the world, mechanically reacting to this and that in pre-programmed sequences. That's not good. You need to be aware. It's almost like you say be aware. It's almost like a warning. So, anyhow, I think I'm going to cut this off. Hope everyone is having a great week so far, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.